progressive ideas, conversations from schools, and the newest concepts in education. This is the School Leadership Podcast.
20 years of muddling through is the eye-catching title to the newest report by the EDSK think tank, which discusses the structure of the state school system some two decades from the creation of the very first academy school in England. The report follows three principles as its framework: coherence, collaboration, and transparency. Tom Richmond is the founder and director of EDSK and met up in person with the Assistant General Secretary of the NHT, James Bowen, to dissect the hugely salient things the report has to say. Tom's experience has included teaching other think tanks and working for an MP. Let's hear that conversation.
Engaging content and revealing insights. In conversation with James Bowen.
You've got this new report out and you've called it 20 Years of Muddling Through, which is an interesting title. Obviously, that's talking about the state of the school system as we currently find it. I wonder if you could start by giving us a bit of an overview of how do you see the school system? Why are we muddling through? Where are we now with it?
Where are we? Goodness me. It has been, it's technically been over 20 years of muddling through since we had the first ever academy school, the City Academy, created by David Blunkett, now Lord Blunkett, back in the early 2000s. It was interesting. We interviewed a huge range of people for this report, and it didn't matter whether they worked in maintained schools, whether they worked in the academy sector, running a single academy or a MAT, or we spoke to policy experts and academics. Absolutely everybody agreed that the system we have now is just a mess. It's just a mess, and it wastes an enormous amount of time, of energy, of resources, just basically propping up what is essentially now two separate state school systems, which is remarkable. To say you wouldn't start from here would be an understatement. We now have two separate state school systems that have different requirements. They're run differently, the accountability is different, the funding is different, the curriculum is different, the admission system is different, the way that we hold schools to account is different. It's just remarkable. And the title of 20 Years of Muddling Through was not meant to be subtle. This is clearly a long-standing problem. We are not a political organisation, the EDSK ourselves. This goes way back to the first academies under the last Labour government and some of the decisions that were made then. But ultimately, with the general election on the way, we think you probably do need a five-year time frame to start unravelling some of this. And we hope that whichever party wins the next election will take a look at this issue and say, we can sort this out. What we don't need is another 5-10 years of muddling through.
And I suppose, how much of a problem do we really think? You've explained really clearly that it is a mess. I think no one would disagree. I guess there is the counter-argument, which is there's so many other things that are a mess at the moment. Do you think that is actually having a negative impact on pupils? Because ultimately, that's the key in all this. Is the fragmented system, the fact we've got two parallel systems, do you think that is having a detrimental impact, or is it just a bit of a pain?
Yeah, a lot of people, when we said we were going to write this report several months ago, they said, there's no point doing that because politicians got too many other things to worry about. Head teachers got too many other things to worry about. We haven't got enough money. We haven't got enough teachers. Why would anybody right now be talking about the technocratic setup of our school system? And we thought, that's a great challenge. And you're absolutely right to say, what is it that makes this issue important when we've got so many other priorities right now? And to us, it's because we're wasting a lot of time propping up two state school systems. Time is just as precious as money. We are wasting a lot of energy. We need to focus on the things that we know work, which is about improving the quality of teaching and leadership and management, something obviously the NEHT all too well. But we find that if you have this system, which is a complete mess, it detracts from those goals that we have, because the people that we need to be driving forward, the better teaching, the better leadership, the better management, they're worrying about something else. They're worrying about the fact that they might have a conversation with a regional schools director or regional schools commissioner, as they used to be called. We have local authorities who are desperately short of money and time being told in the school's white paper, you can now set up a local authority trust, a multi-category trust for the first time, only for that to be pulled away a few months later. So all the time that these local authorities put into this just vanishes, and we never get that time back. We never get the investment back. We never get those resources back. So to us, strangely strangely enough, we think now is the perfect time to be talking about this issue, because we cannot afford to be wasting any more time, any more money, any more energy on things that don't add value for pupils, because there is no, there's no extra money left in the system and no extra time to be thrown away anymore. It's just things are just too tight and too high stakes, as you know.
And do you get any sense of the political appetite for doing something about this? You know, we're sitting here, general election impending sometime this year. Do you get any sort of sense of politicians wanting to grasp this net? I mean, yeah, and you've mentioned the white paper. Obviously, there was an attempt not too long ago, or the proposal that there would be an attempt to kind of start trying to kind of work through the system. That has just kind of faded away. And I think people again sort of find themselves a little bit in limbo, thinking, well, is that gone then? Do you get a sense that politicians are going to, you know, be that a continuation of this government, a new government, a Labour government potentially, going to do this?
Yeah, but when I look into my policy crystal ball, as I'm sure we're all trying to do at the moment, you know, it is obviously unclear exactly where, you know, what's going to happen after the next election in terms of where their priorities are going to be. I look at the demise of the school's white paper, embarrassing a political spectacle, as it clearly was. We now have a serving government that is desperately in search of an agenda because their previous agenda fell apart under a lot of political pressure, not just from opposition parties, from even from their own party to some extent. That's the third time they've tried full academisation since 2010. We documented all that journey at the start of our report. That's pretty painful. I'd be surprised if someone thought the solution is just to do it a fourth time without rethinking the whole thing.
And when you say a fourth time, you mean that full academisation?
Yeah, full academisation. Yeah. If they wanted to go down that road, which is not really what we recommend in our report, but even if they did set that goal, it's clear they got it wrong last time. And then obviously you look at an opposition Labour Party. Clearly, they're still going to be deciding what they want to do. It's very possible that the party manifesto, you know, might, for the election, might not talk about this very much, because, again, we know it takes time to explain these things. It took us 26,500 words in our report to get to the bottom of this. That's not great when you're trying to run an election campaign. We totally get that, of course. But if a new government does come in and they have got, you know, 4/5 years to play with, and they want to make things better for pupils, they want to make things better for teachers and leaders, then that's really what the essence of this report is about. Yes, it involves some technocratic changes, don't get me wrong, which we might come on to talk about, but actually, this is about improving pupil outcomes. This is about making sure that whatever money, and obviously I want more money for schools, but whatever money we put into it, we get the most impact from that. And that's where the enormous amount of time and money and effort being wasted at the moment is so appalling. I think you get a lot of political capital out of that, as well as improving the school system. So we hope there is appetite from both sides of the aisle.
I wonder if it also, though, will take a fair bit of political courage, because I guess inevitably, if you're going to try and grasp this, you're going to upset some people. It's very unlikely you're going to be able to design a system and move to it in a way that everybody's happy. So there is going to be that temptation, I guess, isn't there? Just, let's just leave it. Let's just not. So I think it's going to take some courage, isn't it, for a politician to go, look, it's clearly going to be a vote win, and no one's going to have in the front of their manifesto, vote for us and we'll reform school structures. So someone's going to have to kind of go, look, we're here now, and I'm going to have to have the courage to deal with that. Do you think that's fair, that there is a bit of courage involved here if they're going to do it?
Definitely, and bearing in mind that our, you know, number one recommendation was that we need to put some new legislation under our school system, that will require probably a two-year time frame. You would need to commit to that as any new government. There is no way that's going to happen. That's not just a set of meetings. That's not a single consultation. That is something which requires sustained effort. But again, if they set the right goals, and that's so important in this, you know, we complained a lot about the current system in our report in terms of its effect on vulnerable pupils, particularly the admission system, which we might come on to, which is very heavily weighted against the interests of some of the most vulnerable pupils we have in this country. That is a very powerful political message as much as it's a very powerful policy message as well. So we absolutely think there is a lot for politicians to talk about here in language they understand. But there's also, when I talk to voters, but also there's a lot here for people who genuinely want to improve the system. So we're hoping that whichever way you think about it, policy or politics, we hope that our report sets out where we can make some real progress here.
So let's get into the report. As you said, it's long. There's lots of words, so I'm going to do my best to try and guide you towards summarising it for us in the next sort of 15, 20 minutes or so. And one of the things you say right at the front of the report is this kind of idea of establishing a new framework for the state school system. And I think you talk about some sort of guiding principles that would underpin that? I wonder if you could give us a sort of sense of that high level, what these principles are, what this framework might look like.
Yeah, I mean, it was really important for us to say, again, being a non-political organisation ourselves, we're not really interested in the politics of this. We want to get to a school system whereby the politics is removed as much as possible and the focus of everybody is on improving people outcomes. And so the principles that we set out at the beginning were really sort of part of our critique of the entire system. We think the system right now lacks coherence. There is a spectacular lack of coherence. We are running two separate state school systems. They don't talk to each other. Often they conflict with each other. That is a completely incoherent way of running the school system. So we want coherence. We want transparency as well. There's a lot of issues, I think, at the moment with, again, going back many, many years with the academy system, that what started off as a very, very small, just literally a handful of academies being set up, has now exploded to over 10,000 academies across the country, educating over half of all pupils now. But the problems within that, the way the academies have a contract with central government, for example, which is all kept away from the public eye, we just ended up with these parts of the system whereby even Parliament can't actually look at what's happening properly. And we just think that's not helpful. That's not okay for parents. That's not okay for taxpayers. It's not okay for politicians and for scrutiny. So there's a big push for transparency as well. And then also another big push as a guiding principle of just for collaboration. Because one of the things we heard time and time again with our interviews, and this is not in any way about anti-academies, this is just about the way that we've created the system, is that we have made it, we've almost disincentivized collaboration between schools. Yes, of course, within a multi-academy trust, you could say we've got a great vehicle for collaboration.
I was going to say, it was ironic, because the government would say, there's huge, maths all about collaboration.
Exactly. Yeah. So if everyone goes into a math, then we've got perfect collaboration, right? And the interviews that we had both, and we heard this not just from the Maintain school representatives that we spoke to, but also from people who work in the academy sector saying, what reason have I got to pick up the phone to that other school down the road when I know that they're going to say this? Or why would a multi-academy trust pick up the phone to local authority? Often the academy trust told us they tried to, and the local authority said, I don't want to have anything to do with you because you're not part of our world. We are fighting these battles. You are fighting those battles. The two don't talk to each other. And again, you know, to say you wouldn't start from here, it would be an understatement. We have a system whereby we don't believe you can get great outcomes for pupils if you created a system whereby collaboration happens in spite of the system, not because of the school system. So coherence, collaboration and transparency, we thought, to strip out the politics, we think everyone can get behind those as principles, and then we put a set of recommendations on top of that which we think will deliver this. And not the only way of delivering this, I'm sure some we could come with a different permutation, but we think the recommendations that we've got are a really good way over a sort of 3 to 5 year time frame of getting collaboration, coherence and transparency.
So let's dig into some of those. And the one that really caught my eye was the thing around school boards. And let's see if, yeah, I'll explain how I read it. And you can tell me if I've got it horribly wrong. But there's this sort of sense, I think, of moving away from describing schools as being academies or maintained schools, that a school is a school. And that you would sort of propose every school is sort of overseen by a school board, of which there are three types. And in fairness, some of those aren't too far from the kind of structures we have now, but bringing a sense of coherence. So I wonder if you could tell us this kind of what this role of the school board is and how it would look from currently being MATS, standalone academies and maintained schools to this school board structure.
Yeah, it's a great question. So this idea of school boards, as you say, was designed to move to a system which is just stripping out the politics of this. We think the language of academies and academisation has just become too toxic now. We didn't set out to be that way, but it's become so politicised, so associated with a particular government and even particular ministers within a particular government, we've just got to get away from that. And we think the language of school boards, which countries like the Netherlands use and the US use, is just neutral enough to say, let's just all just get our heads around and say, right, every school is going to be run by a school board. It could be a single school. We have maintained schools now that operate basically as independent schools. We have standalone academies which operate as independent schools. But fine, you can be a single school board, an SSB as we called it. What you can also have is an independent school board, which is essentially a vehicle for a multi-academy trust that exists now. So it's run separately from the local authority. It's not an individual school. It's a collection of schools that just work together to improve outcomes. And then we also had local school boards, as we called them, which are essentially what the government proposed with their local authority trust model, whereby the local authority, if they want to stay involved in schools in their area, which is a choice that we were happy to give them, then we would say you would essentially be the same vehicle as what we now have as a multi-academy trust. It would look very similar. But the idea of a school board is it doesn't matter what type of board you go for, it doesn't matter how many schools are within your board, you have a set of trustees at the top, not dissimilar from what we have now in multi-academy trusts, and indeed governors who maintain schools. They are essentially accountable for what happens within that school board. And as you'd expect, they would then be held to account for how well they are performing. And there would at some point need to be obviously a support mechanism for those that are struggling, and indeed intervention for those that need, you know, particular support. But the idea was really just to take all the different structures we have now and just put it all on a level playing field. So we don't talk about academies, we just talk about schools, then school boards, and that's it. And that brings what we hope is a much greater sense of coherence, gets rid of this, well, I'm this type of school and you're that type of school, which we think is just really unhelpful, and just have a level playing field, same rules and regulations for absolutely everyone. It will be set out in legislation rather than the bizarre system we have now where maintained schools are governed by legislation and academies are governed by handbooks and ministerial declarations and things that change all the time. One set of legislation, one set of school boards, all governed in the same way, some bigger, some smaller, some single schools, all within one system.
And I guess that crucial in that is that line you said about same rules and regulations, because I guess without a cynic might say, well, haven't you just renamed the existing system? So what you're saying is, well, MATs are going to be called this, local authority. So, well, nothing's really changed other than the language, but actually something has changed other than the language. If we're saying that the same rules and regulations, you know, we are treating all schools as schools, that it's more than just a change in terminology. Is that fair?
Exactly. So we're creating just the three different vehicles for existing schools to move across to, but once there, they've moved across, everyone gets treated the same way. We would have a piece of legislation, call it whatever you want, this new school system 2025 or whatever you want to call the piece of legislation, just like the government tried with the school's white paper. But again, they weren't producing a coherent answer to a lot of the problems that we have. They were just trying to drag as many other schools into sort of the system that they envisaged with full academisation. We just think that's wrong. This is, there are good things about the academy system. There are bad things about the academy system. Let's build on the things which are good around the collaboration, around the fact that they can move into different areas and support different schools, the fact that as they get stronger, you expect them to take on more role for helping other schools in their local area. There's lots of good things that are happening in that academy system, and we definitely don't subscribe to the view that academisation in itself is the problem. We think the way it's being done has been more of a problem. The fact that it's become so politicised, like I say, really is not very helpful. So we just think a piece of legislation, as we basically used to have for maintained schools, to be fair, one set of rules for everyone. And of course, you know, that's not to say that the system remains static. Any government can change legislation, right? We know this, but funnily enough, it's a lot easier to mess around with the academy's handbook and the government to say, oh, we're going to put a new rule here and a new rule there for academies this year. But of course, if you want to change legislation, you have to go through a process and you have to get agreement and you have to have votes in Parliament, and Parliament can see what's happening. The government can change the rules for academies without Parliament being anywhere near it. And that, again, just creates the wrong atmosphere. How are you supposed to plan? How are you supposed to grow? How are you supposed to focus on pupil outcomes if all of a sudden the minister can just say, if any political party can just say, I've changed my mind, we're going to run academies differently now. And you go, well, that's not okay. We think that transparency and scrutiny is important. Legislation is the best way to do that.
And that leads into one of the other things in your report that caught my eye. You are quite critical in the report of the kind of political interference, the centralisation that has gone on within the school system, which is really in itself quite interesting, that the idea that we've had an increasingly centralised system, when you think back to the original thinking behind academisation, was the exact opposite. It was about empowering individual school leaders and unleashing schools from the sort of central control of local authority. Ironically, you're talking about a system that in some ways has become more centralised. But what I'm really interested in is your kind of solution around that. And you talk about this idea of a sort of a new independent regulator. I'm just really interested in what role you see for that. I mean, we've talked in HT a lot. I know lots of our members are keen for this kind of a body, an organisation that takes the politics out of education, that depoliticises things. How would that regulator work? How far would it go in doing that?
Well, ultimately, when it comes to this system of school boards that we propose, a bit like we have for Academy Trust now, the good ones should be left alone and able to get on with what we do. If we create a good accountability system, we can see which ones are performing well, which ones are doing the best things for disadvantaged pupils particularly, and we can let them get on with it. But of course, we have a system of intervention now. It's not done very well, all this debate around the double RI judgment, which I'm sure your members have had great, great fun with. So we got really negative feedback about that kind of system in our interviews. But we have an accountability system. We will always need an accountability system. This is taxpayers' money. It's pupil outcomes. We can't have a government walk away from that entirely. But at the same time, we have a system now where ministerial whim can dictate far, far too much in the system. That we have these regional directors, or formerly regional schools commissioners, that were created, again, with reasonable intentions. There were far too many academies now. It started off as a very small initiative, much, much bigger. We may have to create another layer of civil servants to look after that. That's fine, but if they still report into the Secretary of State for Education, then ultimately they're there. They are there to do what ministers tell them to do. That is the whole purpose of having them as civil servants within the department. Ultimately, even if they are sort of technically a separate sort of bit within it, they're still accountable to politicians. And we looked at where we are with things like Ofqual and the exam system, where we have an independent regulator that's given a job by government, and it is, again, set out in legislation. What is their job to do? They're there to protect the integrity of exams. They're there to make sure the exams, the quality of exams stays constant over time. It's set out in law what they're there to do, and they are a team of civil servants. And so we looked at the regional director model and said, that's not a crazy model to have, that you need someone to oversee the system, to look at where the weak areas are, to address cold spots, to look at the performance of multi-academy trusts and see which ones need to expand and which ones maybe need to lose some schools. Those are all sensible conversations, but not they can't be driven by what politicians think. And ultimately, our goal with this new regulator was basically to take what regional directors do now and just move that into an independent regulator and get it out of that, out of the reach of politicians. Yes, politicians will set the legal goals for that organisation, but beyond that, we leave it up to the system to figure out. And we think that's a much healthier dynamic. Once you've got legislation in place to say what the rules and regulations are for all schools, legislation in place to say what the job of this regulator is, to obviously ultimately try and improve the quality of schools for everyone, and let the system get on with it and not have this annual, you know, farce of government saying, oh, we've changed our mind, now we want to do something else.
And this is obviously going way beyond your report. And I'll be right in saying that regulator, you don't see them kind of getting involved in curriculum decisions, decisions around, let's say, how assessment works, for example. I mean, often there is a call for that people say, I want a kind of independent body to make these education decisions. I don't. But the regulator has got a very specific role in your model. As you're not seeing it as a kind of, setting policy for education, or are you? Is there more to it?
No, absolutely not. That's what the system does. Again, if we're going to have a coherent system, it's got to be focused on what is best for pupils. It's got to be focused on pupil outcomes. It's got to be focused on that important. And it is a very important question in the academy system we have now of who is the best operator for that school. And that is, there's obviously, because we have two separate state school systems, that throws up all kinds of ridiculous conversations around, do we academise this school? Do we then make, obviously once your school's been academised, you can't then convert back to being a maintained school anymore. And you just go, again, it just creates friction the way that we go about it. But it's the right thing to do. We've got to constantly be thinking, this school, in this part of the country, in this location, who is the best person to run that school? And it's very possible that if we set up local authority school boards, the local school boards that we created, it's very possible that actually the local authority may be doing a perfectly good job at that school and we let them get on with it. Whereas now there's always this constant looking over your shoulder. Am I going to be next for academisation? What's going to happen to me? Because we've got this lopsided two separate state school systems that are being held to account in different ways. We think it's absolutely vital that if a school is underperforming and it gets support and it's still underperforming, we need some kind of mechanism to do something about that, but you know, in extreme cases. But ultimately, we don't want politicians deciding, oh, I want a new school there, I want to close down that school. We just got to get them away from those decisions.
And we've mentioned local authorities a few times in this, and I know you're very keen, we don't want to set this up as a kind of LA school versus MAPS or standalone academies. What I'm interested in, though, the kind of, what is the role for the local authority in this new model? Because there is still a role for the local authority. You've tried to sort of clarify that a bit, haven't you, in the report?
Yeah, so it's not dissimilar to some of the things we saw in the school's white paper where the government talked about the local authority stepping back. So the core local authority itself stepping back from its role of actually being involved in the maintained schools and working much more as a champion for all children. So doing special needs, school transport, pupil admissions, that actually really is to focus on all pupils in all schools. And that is absolutely the vision that we share. We think the local authority, to have the local authority involved in some schools but not involved in other schools in their local area, is just a ridiculous way of getting any kind of coherence and collaboration going. So we sort of agree with the government's direction of travel in the schools white paper to say local authority acts as a champion now for all children's interests in all schools. But if the local authority wanted to be continue to be involved in running schools, then they could set up a local school board, as we described it. But they don't have to. Either way, the local authority itself is now responsible for all pupils in all schools. If they want to set up what is essentially an arm's length organisation, such as a local school board, a bit like a MAP now, then they'll be held to account in exactly the same way that every other school is. And if they're doing well, then they could take on more schools. If they're doing poorly, they might eventually have schools taken off them. So it's really, we think it's a good way of empowering local authority to say, it is now time for you to choose. And some local authorities, as I'm sure you know, there's barely any maintained schools left there at all. Sometimes literally one or two left. But other local authorities still have a very strong presence. And so our argument is, if we want to move to a more coherent system, let the local authority choose whether they want to keep that role overseeing the actual running of schools in the way that a MAP does, or they want to take a step back. But either way, the local authority itself is there to look after all pupils. And we think there's, a sort of good policy and political reasons to do that.
And I guess for that to work, the local authority would, for want of a better phrase, have to have some teeth. Because I think one of the challenges in the current system is the local authorities often have the responsibilities, but they don't have the power. And I guess that links in nicely to one of the big issues that came through really strongly in the report is around admissions.
Yeah.
And you've touched on that already in terms of how the admission system, frankly, in the report just doesn't work. I think the analysis that says, look, we don't think this works currently. How would that work? What's the local authority's role in admissions? What do admissions look like?
Yeah, I mean, the recommendation from us was pretty straightforward, which is the local authority should be the admissions authority for all state-funded schools. At the moment, academies act as their own admissions authority, which means they can, obviously within some rules, they can start to decide what kind of admissions policy they want to have. What we found was that in some parts of the country, there are now 100 to 200 different admissions policies now being operated by different schools. And the idea that anyone can suggest that's in the best interest of pupils, to me, is just pretty ridiculous. I mean, if the goal, again, is to improve pupil outcomes and to make sure that most vulnerable and disadvantaged pupils are looked after, we cannot have a system where some schools say yes and some schools say no, even to the same pupil. Just to give a practical example, with fair access protocols that we have in place for some of the most vulnerable pupils, if a pupil... If a local authority says we need to put these people into a school, they absolutely are a priority people, we need to get them into a local school, they can say, if they say to an academy, we want them to go into your school, the academy is allowed to refuse to accept that pupil, but a maintained school is not allowed to refuse to accept that pupil. If the academy refuses, then the local authority has to go and ask the Department of Education to try and force that academy to take on that pupil, whereas with a maintained school, they can just say you have to take them. And it's those sorts of things where if you really care about the interests of the most vulnerable pupils, again, we just can't have these absurd disparities in the system where some schools can say to say no. And we've sadly, although lots of the MATs that we spoke to, they are absolutely engaged with the local authority and they are absolutely committed to inclusion. They are absolutely committed to social justice. And it's really empowering to listen to those leaders talk about it. But even some of those MAT leaders knew of other MATs in their local area who were like, well, I've already got too many send pupils. I don't really want any more, thanks. Because they're trying to boost their results rather than focusing on inclusion. And it's just, you can just see that actually, it's not just maintained school representatives who complain about sell the paper and MATs. It's often other MAT leaders complaining that the other people in the MAT system are giving MATs a bad name because they are not focused on inclusion and the most vulnerable pupils. And so for us, the equation is very, very simple. We can't allow individual state schools to say, yeah, we're going to decide how things go for us, even if it means there's huge problems for another school down the road. We don't really care. We're going to do what's best for us. And we see these problems, I'm sure a lot of your members see it, with pupil admission numbers now going up and down in different schools and the local authorities sitting here watching this stuff happen around them. If you want to close a maintained school, there's a local authority process you have to go through with consultation, etc. But academies can only be closed by the Secretary of State for Education. So again, it's just a different world. So if we want to get the best outcomes for pupils in a particular area, we cannot do that when we have two separate state school systems with different rules, different admission systems, different systems for opening and closing schools as well. It's just, I mean, it borders on farcical for some of the case studies that we heard about. That's not right for pupils, certainly not for particularly vulnerable pupils. So, yeah, we just think put local authorities in their role as champion for all children and young people, give them the responsibility for all state-funded admissions so we don't have any of these silly conversations in a few years from now.
It strikes me as you're talking, there's almost a kind of a fifth unwritten principle within this, which is around fairness. Whether that's fairness for schools, fairness for pupils, fairness for families. I think as you're talking, it's like you're identifying a lot of parts of the system, which is not, that's not fair, you know, in any kind of natural justice sense of it. Well, that's not fair. And there's an element of perhaps what you're trying to do as well as the other prisoners, bring a bit of fairness to the system. Everyone's on an equal playing field. Is there some truth in that?
Yeah, very much so. So, I mean, that links into one of the other big themes, which is around transparency, particularly in terms of school funding. Because there's a big conversation going around gag pooling at the moment, which is obviously affects the academy sector a lot more than it does maintained schools. I'm sure maintained schools sort of watching a lot of these things happen. This idea that a trust can just sort of suck in all the money that its schools receive, and then without any accountability or any transparency to the outside world, can then rearrange the funding for their schools and then hand it back out to those schools in whatever way that they want to. That's the kind of thing where we would say this has to stop because it's just not fair. The reason we say it's not fair is not just because we think that Parliament has, you know, taxpayers have a right to know where taxpayers' money is going, which is a sort of very basic sort of fairness point. But also, with the national funding formula, I mean, goodness knows how long you and your members have been sort of watching this. It's almost saga over the national funding formula. We've just about got to the point where we were on the verge of a funding system which was fair to everyone. It has been a painstaking process. But we had all these problems in the past where local authorities would behave differently from the neighbouring local authority. They would take different amounts of money. They would distribute the money differently. And everyone hated that. Everybody hated it. Everyone thought it was grossly unfair that different parts of the country, even neighbouring local authorities, neighbouring towns and cities, were just getting different amounts of money going out to the schools. So we collectively said, no, we don't want that. We want to move to a national funding formula. And yet here we are with a system whereby the multi-economy trust can choose to pool all its money and then give it out in a way that whatever it wants, in a way that the government cannot even check that every pupil now receives the minimum guaranteed funding that they are entitled to get. That is how little transparency we have with the system now. And although we did hear, you know, some MAT leaders say that gag pooling is great because it allows them to run the schools in a way that they want to, ultimately, if we want fairness in the system and we want transparency, this is not okay. And so we said this whole idea of gag pooling has got to be banned, and we want the national funding formula to be operated for every single state school in exactly the same way, with complete transparency over where the money's going. Yes, of course, the school boards, because they look a little bit like trusts, would be able to top slice, which of course would be transparent. We said that's fine. That's exactly how a lot of multi-economy trusts still operate. But the ones who are gag pooling, I don't think that they're doing anything malicious at all. They're not doing it with the wrong intentions. But if we want fairness, we want every school to be treated the same way and pupils to receive the money they're entitled to, gag pooling has to go.
So. And I imagine, well, I don't imagine, I know there'll be lots of our members listening to this who say absolutely, you know, the gag pooling recommendation is one which will be music to their ears, that, you know, they've long said this is not right. I suppose there will be some, and you've referred to the sort of CEOs there, who, and I imagine the government, in fact, I've had this conversation with government, who would say, well, this is the very beauty of multi-academy trusts. We could, what is it, economies of scale? You can allocate resources according to need, and if actually some need it more than others. So what would you say back to a government trying to defend gag pooling, or even, you know, some large multi-academy trusts to say, actually, this is really helpful for us, you know, it allows us to use our resources more efficiently?
Yeah, we've absolutely heard that argument, and our argument back to that would simply be, we have designed collectively in a very long drawn out process a national funding formula which is supposed to respond to need. It's to, the money should go, more money should go to the schools with the greatest needs. How we think about that need, of course, is conceptualized within the national funding. That could change in future. I'm not saying the national funding formula is perfect or should never change, but the concept of making sure that every head teacher, every school gets allocated money in a fair way, I think is absolutely vital. And I think it is ultimately a trade-off. You could make the case that if we want multi-academy trusts, or as we call them, you know, school boards in future, to run in a way which they think is best for pupil outcomes, well, they could say, well, we think this is better for our pupils, and therefore we should be allowed to do this. But ultimately, if you lose parliamentary, well, the ability to even scrutinise what's happening, that's also a very big loss. And clearly, someone whose job it is to run a multi-company trust is not necessarily going to be thinking, what's best for Parliament? What's best for the taxpayer? That's not necessarily what they're there to do. So it has to be a government who steps in and says, you know what, we want fairness for all pupils. We've got the national funding formula. Let's get on with it and just stop having these conversations.
And it does feel like a policy that's beset with contradictions. On the one hand, you've got a national funding formula which says what we're trying to do here is allocate the needs of the pupils in that particular school. That's how we allocate it. It will be at aggregated level, but we try and allocate based on needs. But if that's the case, then surely the money needs to go to that school. Otherwise, why are you doing that formula? And I guess the other contradiction is, well, if this concept is of gagballing is good, perhaps we should let local authorities do it. Perhaps we should give money. It's kind of what's good for one is good for the other. So it does feel like a policy that, when you start thinking about it logically, doesn't make a lot of sense. If a new government or the same government were to pick up your report, can they do this in a piecemeal fashion? So could you pick up parts of your report and say, actually, let's say, we'll stop gag pooling, we'll sort out the admissions process, but actually we're not going to do some of that stuff? Or do you think, really, this is a package, you have to do this in one fell swoop, and if you start tinkering with one bit, it has implications elsewhere?
There would be a few little bits of our report that could be done without the big picture. I mean, gag pooling is an obvious example. You've got the Academy's financial handbook. Much as we complain about how much tinkering there is with it all the time from politicians, technically they could tinker with it again and say gag pooling is no longer allowed. There's a specific section in the handbook which says, gag pooling's fair game, but you're allowed to crack on with it. So, yes, you could make some changes there. Around admissions, you could possibly make some changes there again with the Academy's financial handbook, but I think it would be a pretty tortuous process to do it. I mean, we really think that, a government that, even if the government comes in, we're not expecting them to have lots of money to spend. This isn't really a money question. This is it's not a question of how much money you put into the system. Our report is about, regardless of how much money you put into the system, how do you get the greatest impact? I think that word you used earlier, impact, is so important. How do you get the greatest impact from the money you put into the system? We just hope that actually that is enough of a temptation to say that, this is worth a new piece of legislation, which was Michael Gove did back in 2010. The Academy's acting, there was a huge undertaking, but that drove so much of what's happened since then. We think something like that is now necessary. And obviously the Labour Party already talking about, 10 years in power, which is quite bold of Keir Starmer to do it. But hey, that's what they're thinking about as a new government in waiting, as they see themselves. Why not? Why not look at it as a 10-year programme? And if the Conservative Party get elected, they've obviously got some things in place they could now use. They wanted to get a piece of legislation off the ground as well. So to us, it's not going to be a small undertaking, but it's not necessarily that radical. The Conservative Party just tried it. They just didn't do it in the right way. Piece of legislation, we just hope there is enough of a reason to say, let's do it as a package, because the benefits of pupils, out for schools, out for teachers and leaders, they're worth fighting for. And you're right, there'll always be pushback. There'll always be people who say, oh, well, I've got a slightly different plan. Fine, let's have those conversations. Let's get them out of the open. Let's thrash it out. The government, I think, the current government did push this in a bundle too quickly into the school's white paper without bringing people with them, which I think was a mistake. They sort of tried to impose it on the system. They tried to impose full academisation on the system in 2016 as well, and it didn't go very well. Our hope is, if you focus on collaboration, coherence, transparency, which I hope everyone can get around. Absolutely everyone should be able to get around them. Who would argue those are bad things out in the school system? If we can get everybody around that, there'll be some small details we want to keep debating. Great, let's have those conversations. But we hope there is appetite for the package, even though it would require, plenty of time and thought, no doubt.
So our time has run out, but I really more than anything want to congratulate you on the report. Very few people have actually tried to wrestle with this. It's always, everyone puts it in the too difficult box, including successive governments. So congratulations on a report which does feel coherent. To play back one of your principles, that does make some really interesting recommendations. And best of luck in your kind of ongoing conversations with this or future governments in terms of trying to kind of get that breakthrough and bring some coherence to the system.
Yeah, you're very kind. Thank you so much for the invitation to come along today.
edsk.org is their website, edsk.org. And Tom Richmond was talking there to James Bowen. Our thanks to you for listening to the School Leadership Podcast. Subscribing in any of the major podcast apps is certainly the most effective way to ensure that new episodes are brought to your attention and ready to play whenever you want them. Having your feedback is always useful too. If you can just take a few minutes to write a review of the School Leadership Podcast, that would be really great. NEHT is a professional association and union for school leaders. To discover more about the benefits of being an NEHT member, go online to nht.org.uk/join. That's nht.org.uk/join. And you can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. NEHT News is the account, at NEHT News. Look after yourself and keep an eye out for the next episode.
For regular and useful content on the teaching profession, it has to be the School Leadership Podcast. The School Leadership Podcast. The School Leadership Podcast. The School Leadership Podcast.